Hello and welcome to our program Fortune, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Shama Kapasi, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the Fortune February and March 2021 edition here on OWL Radio. During this session, I'd like to cover some of the global outlook, and in addition to that, there are several other nice articles on the most prepared woman in Washington, who is Janet Yellen, as well as the cybersecurity mess called After SolarWinds, Untangling America's Cybersecurity Mess. Well, let's begin with the overlooked tech portfolio. During the pandemic, investors have flocked to Tesla, Zoom, and the FAAMG stocks. But the pros expect a very different cohort of market winners in tech this year, by Jen Weixner. If there was anything in 2020 that went better than expected, it was the stock market. Mike Lippert can attest to that. The manager of the Barron Opportunity Fund remembers feeling in April the bleak dread of recession. Instead, his fund returned roughly 90% last year. His best performance to date, and perhaps Lippert thinks his best ever. I am very realistic that it's a career year, he says. But Lippert doesn't owe his outsized returns to any major dip buying back in March. During the blink and you missed it bear market, rather, his best bets had been years in the making, including stakes in Tesla, which was up 743% in 2020, Netflix, and of course Zoom. We were investing in mostly digital trends, and they became must-haves. Must-dos during the pandemic, explains Lippert. It's a lesson that has increasingly been borne out in the past decade. Many tech companies have proved they are much less sensitive to downturns than anyone thought, while any company that's not on a digital trajectory put its investors at risk. Put another way, if you want to make money in today's market, why own anything but tech stocks? A lot of these tech companies have become the consumer staples of today, says Sonu Kalra, manager of the $48.4 billion Fidelity Blue Chip Growth Fund. They've become an ingrained part of our lives. Besides Amazon, Kalra has recently bought more of big tech companies, including Apple, Alphabet, and Facebook. These four stocks, plus Microsoft, are the FAAMG companies. Facebook, Apple, Alphabet, and Microsoft, Google, which went on a tear in 2020 that left them accounting for almost a quarter of the market capitalization of the S&P 500 by year's end. Still, with most FAAMG companies valued at upwards of $1 trillion apiece, the math just makes it harder for them to continue delivering the multi-bagger returns investors strive for. That's why growth-oriented investors are now looking for gains from a younger generation of companies that are similarly promising to change the way we live and work, from finance to entertainment. Starting from a smaller base than the tech giants, these companies in the US and abroad have more potential to get a lot bigger. But in many cases, their stock prices have not, shall we say, zoomed quite as much over the past 12 months. Indeed, with many tech stocks already trading at all-time highs, money managers are looking past valuations and pricing solid balance sheets over bargains, particularly as risks abound with much of the economy, notably travel and hospitality. Still in tatters, pretty much every good company trades at high valuation today, said Leipert. Rather than reshuffling their portfolios for an economic recovery in 2021, investors are wagering on continued growth of innovative companies, which may still accelerate as the coronavirus wanes. We believe winners can keep winning for a very long period of time, says Rebecca Irwin, co-manager of the PGIM Jennison Focused Growth Fund, which was up more than 67% last year. Leipert of Barron Opportunity has been pairing his highest flyers while building up positions in other stocks that have gone relatively overlooked. We love Zoom Video, but they're not going to grow as fast in 2021 as they did in 20. It's literally impossible, he says. Lately, he's been buying cloud companies, including Guideware Software, which is digitizing the property and casualty insurance industry. Guideware and some other enterprise tech companies lagged the sector last year. As their clients put big software deals on hold. But Leipert thinks such stocks will thrive over the next 4 years as corporate spending bounces back. I'm not arguing these are cheap companies, he says. But I believe we can make double-digit long-term returns. Alan Tu, manager of $8.8 billion T. Rowe Price Global Technology Fund, which returned more than 75% last year, has been sorting out COVID winners from what he calls COVID imposters, companies whose success will fade with the coronavirus. In the winning camp, he puts Twilio. The company behind those messages, text messages alerting you when your Uber is outside, your takeout order is ready for pickup, or it's time to vote for your candidate. Twilio's stock price more than tripled in 2020, valuing it at $60 billion. But you can kind of get this feeling that we're just scratching the surface now that this digital relationship has been established, says Tu. Likewise, Fidelity's Calra thinks certain quarantine-inspired behaviors will last even when people go back to the office. That's why he recently stocked up on Wayfair, the online furniture and decor retailer. My sense is that my appreciation for my house will continue post-pandemic as well, he says. Those new homeowner habits shared across the white-collar workforce are fueling other changes, as Wayfair, the e-commerce company, turned its first profit in the second quarter of 2020 and has continued the streak. Other companies that survive the pandemic with minimal damage will likely also get a boost as normality returns. Natasha Kulkin, co-manager of PGIM Jennison Focused Growth Fund, is fond of Match Group, which owns more than 40 online dating communities, serving demographics that range from Gen Z through senior citizens. While roughly 40% of heterosexual couples now meet online, up from 5% 2 decades ago, according to a 2019 Stanford study, that share is still increasing. Kulkin estimates Match revenue grew nearly 20% last year, despite the damper that masks and contagion put on dating. There should be even more potential when romance reverts to being less dangerous undertaking. We do expect some re-acceleration. Eventually, couples will want somewhere to go on dates again, which is one reason why Dan Chung, CEO and Chief Investment Officer of Alger, sees opportunity in restaurants, particularly those that have leaned into online ordering. Digital orders now make up 60% of sales at Shake Shack, where overall sales were actually 4% higher in the final quarter of 2020 than the year earlier. Despite the fact that many burger joint locations remain closed, even if online ordering shrinks to half its current proportion once people can dine out again, it's going to be 30% of a company that's growing really rapidly. Underpinning restaurants and other shops' ability to shift so quickly to e-commerce are the digital payment companies, but e-commerce payments are just one part of the business at Square. Erwin of PGIM Jennison is excited by the explosion in the use of Square's Cash app, which enable people to receive their stimulus checks digitally, as well as trade stocks and Bitcoin on their phones. I don't think you'd see us owning a traditional financial institution. They just don't have the growth prospects that really intrigue us, she says. With the world's gaze on vaccines, no tech portfolio would be complete without technology-driven healthcare companies. Algiers Chung is investing in a handful of companies that supply the tools and materials to develop mRNA-based drugs, a therapeutic technology rich with research potential after the success of vaccine makers like Moderna. Chung describes his focus as the picks and shovels way to play this, as opposed to trying to bet on which miner will hit gold. By buying pharmaceutical companies, he owns Massachusetts-based Replegion, whose equipment is used to produce and test biologic drugs, as well as Minneapolis firm Biotechna, which supplies antibodies and reagents to pharmaceutical labs. We sometimes call these compounders. This isn't going to be the fastest growing company in the universe, but we think it's going to continue to be a nice, steady growth company for years to come. For other steady growth tech companies, look no further than China, the only major economy that managed to expand in 2020. The pandemic sped up the shift to e-commerce even more acutely than where a lack of major chain retailers combined with a dearth of storage space in small homes has long necessitated more frequent store runs. A particular inconvenience given heavy traffic congestion and then the virus, says Fidelity's Cal Ra. So when you put all these things together, the benefits of e-commerce are actually greater in China, he says. Besides shopping giant Alibaba, he's been buying lesser-known Pinduoduo, a growing e-commerce seller in China's mid-sized cities. Pinduoduo, whose share price nearly quintupled last year in August, replaced venerable Silicon Valley data management company NetApp. For a counterpart in Latin America, Erwin favors the region's largest e-commerce player, Argentina-based Mercado Libre, which has also built a fintech business for paying and lending that's flourishing in places like Brazil. T. Rose, too, meanwhile, is betting on Singapore's C, a major e-commerce force in Southeast Asia that also makes a viral video game akin to Epic's Fortnite, as well as a digital payments business that has taken off during the pandemic. There's a reason for the New York Stock Exchange listed stock is now Two's top holding, right above Amazon. A company like C has elements of Amazon in its early years, says Two. Investors would be smart to own both. So that is the brief, the Overlook Tech portfolio. So let's move on to the next article, and this is the most prepared woman in Washington. Trailblazing Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is renowned among peers for her meticulous research and relentless focus. As the Biden administration's economic point person, the former Federal Reserve Chair is now charged with stabilizing and stimulating an economy ravaged by the pandemic, and that's just the beginning of her ambitious agenda. Yellen is an icon waiting to happen. With her signature silver bob, single-strand pearl necklace, and seemingly infinite supply of jewel-toned jackets, it's easy to imagine the new Treasury Secretary's image emblazoned on T-shirts and her silhouette outlined on inspirational Instagram posts. She's a natural fit as an emblem of the hashtag girlboss movement that has so finely boiled down modern feminism into a shallow yet marketable vestige of unadulterated capitalism. A conceit used to describe the relentless rise and grind of business leaders like Marissa Mayer and Sheryl Sandberg. Yellen's Q score with Gen Y should soon be on the rise. On Wall Street, meanwhile, Yellen is also seen as a known quantity. The former Fed chair is someone who doesn't make surprise decisions, who says what she's going to do and then does just that. Big finance is optimistic that she'll be a business-oriented leader. The confidence is only bolstered by the fact that Yellen collected more than $7 million in speaking fees from the likes of Goldman Sachs and hedge fund Citadel since leaving the Fed 2 years ago. A revelation that stirred a bit of controversy among Democrats. Progressives like to think of Yellen as an advocate for underrepresented Americans. They see her as someone who will push for a higher minimum wage, more regulation of shadow banking, and new legislation in the mode of Dodd-Frank to protect consumers. To liberals, Yellen is someone who will at last put the guardrails on Wall Street. But no matter what persona is projected onto Yellen, feminist hero, Wall Street savior, progressive darling, the magnitude of her new day job dwarfs all of them in consequence. As Treasury Secretary, she is running point for the Biden administration's effort to stabilize a teetering U.S. that has been rocked by the pandemic. Her decisions over the next few months will have a profound impact on how the economy can rebound. The challenges facing Yellen and the rest of President Joe Biden's economic team are daunting. Though the U.S. unemployment rate has fallen from its peak of 14.7 last April, it plateaued at 6.7 in the final months of 2020, nearly twice as high as the year earlier. The Reserve has already taken rates down to near zero. Thousands of small businesses have closed for good. And there is rising concern in Washington about continued borrowing to stimulate the economy. The national debt grew by a stunning $7.8 trillion. And the $3 trillion in stimulus funding Trump signed into law last year. Some Republicans are now using the specter of further debt to push back against President Biden's proposal of $1.9 trillion stimulus bill. Yellen is also taking the reins at a Treasury Department that has been greatly reduced in size and capacity under her predecessor, Steven Mnuchin. Between 16 and 19, the Treasury's main offices, including domestic finance, economic policy, and international affairs, saw staffing drop by 25% as budgets fell. Those departures controlled responses to the economic recovery, financial policy, and grant programs. Mnuchin operated without a deputy for 2 years and left the Division of Domestic Finance without an official leader. Yellen will have to bring in a number of people, and quickly. Hard to imagine a leader with more sparkling credentials for the work at hand than the 74-year-old Yellen. Each career peak on her resume has been seemingly followed by another. Higher summit, a mountain range of firsts. Yellen was the only woman in her class to earn an econ PhD at Yale, and she was then the sole female economics professor at Harvard University. She served under President Clinton as chair of Council of Economic Advisors, and she was the second woman to serve in that role. In 14, she was confirmed as the first female chair of the Federal Reserve under Obama, and now under President Biden, she achieved yet another title, the first woman Secretary of the Treasury. Her new job also makes Yellen the first person of any gender to complete the Holy Trinity of the U.S. finance circuit: Council of Economic Advisors Chair, Fed Chair, and Treasury Secretary. She has hit the ground running, working with Biden to get his COVID-19 relief bill passed by Congress. In a conversation with Fortune, she underscores the new administration's top priorities: a successful distribution of at least 100 million doses of vaccine within 100 days, reopening schools, providing a $1,400 stimulus check, making sure Americans are able to remain in their homes without eviction. It's a priority to help get us through the pandemic, to get our economy functioning again, she says of the stimulus legislation. The new secretary also echoes President Biden's call for both parties to dial back politics in the interest of problem solving. I hope very much that we can work in a bipartisan way, Democrats and Republicans together, to get behind the sort of stalemate that has been around for a number of years now. The business world would be comfortable with Yellen, but she's no business person herself. Unlike Hank Paulson or Jon Snow, Wall Street execs turned treasury heads, Yellen is a career economist. The former Federal Reserve Chair and now distinguished fellow at the Brookings Institution isn't to please any particular interest group. Rather, it's how do we get the economy going and how do we make sure the benefits are spread as widely as possible. If Mnuchin was the Beltway's most eager man, as he's been called, the Brooklyn-born Yellen in Washington is Washington's most prepared woman. She certainly won't be arranging photo ops with sheets of money as her predecessor did. She got a whole new set of issues that she's going to have to dig into, and she will. Indeed, Yellen is legendary for her focus. Her colleagues, past and present, emphasize that their relationship with Yellen is centered wholly around work and shop talk. She often remarks that people would be bored if they joined her family for dinner, as she and her husband George, who won the Nobel Prize in Economics in 2001, usually engage in rigorous work-related discussion. Her son is also in the family business. He received his PhD in economics from Harvard University in 2009 and teaches at the University of Warwick in England. Bernanke is quick to point out that Yellen prefers to prepare for meetings very, very far in advance. She's known for showing up to airports hours before her flight, and she says she uses the extra time to read. She's meticulous, cautious, and thoughtful, speaks quietly, well prepared, and she's done all of the analysis. But she's not a shrinking violet, and she's not afraid to speak up. Perhaps the quietest person in the room is the person you most want to listen to. Yellen prefers to read from notes rather than speak off the cuff. He describes her unique procedure for answering audience questions, and first she writes out her response and commits it to memory. Next, she rings up the paper and she finally speaks. Yellen also possesses a rare charisma, says Mary C. Daly, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. She's especially skilled at making people feel seen. She also makes a habit of asking colleagues for their opinions, even when it's likely that she already knows what she's going to do. Yellen may be genuinely curious, but soliciting input also offers colleagues a quick ego rub, and massaging egos is a skill that certainly doesn't hurt Yellen, who has made a career of being the only woman in rooms full of well-venerated men. The people sitting around the tables at the G7, G20, and the IMF like Yellen, but also respect her, says Weisel. Her stature will give her substantial influence in the office, he predicts. When she chooses to use it, she'll have something close to veto power over big economic policies. One event sticks out in Wessel's mind as a moment when Yellen gave a rare glimpse of her political stripes. In 2014, and Yellen was nearly a year into her role as Fed chair, when she gave a speech on the inequality of economic opportunity to a room full of her peers at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. Income and wealth and inequality, she said, were near their highest levels in the past 100 years, and the trend concerned her. And then, in an unfed chair, an un-Yellen way, she editorialized, just a little. I think it's appropriate to ask whether this trend is comparable with values rooted in our nation's history. Among them, the high value of Americans have traditionally placed on the equality of opportunity. Everyone in the government community knows that Yellen is a liberal Democrat, but that really shouldn't influence her job as Federal Reserve Chair, commented N. Gregory Mankiw, former economic advisor to George Bush. Months later, Yellen, who appears to skew much closer to the center of the political spectrum than the far left, reported to Congress to deliver her semi-annual monetary policy report. She found that Republicans were still focused on her remarks in Boston. She didn't see what she was. A visibly rattled Yellen defended her position. I am not making political statements, she said. I am discussing a significant problem that faces America. She didn't see what she was saying as anything but data-driven analysis. And anyway, it's been a topic I've addressed on a number of occasions before. Yellen expressed a rare setback in 2018 when then-President Trump essentially axed her and replaced her as Fed chair with Jerome Powell. She was disappointed. She thought that Trump likes her and that she had a shot of being reappointed. She was happy that Powell, a peer she respects, was nominated to do the job. In December, Yellen stood next to President Biden in Washington as she accepted his nomination for secretary. Her father, she said, was a dentist who began his business during the Great Depression, setting up shop near Bush Terminal. At the end of the day, he'd discuss their lives with young Janet. If they had lost a job, he would tell her about the financial and family problems and their inability to afford health care and their loss of self-worth. These lessons struck with her so much that I became an economist because I was concerned about the toll of unemployment on people, families, and communities, she said in her speech. Yellen tells Fortune that at the Treasury she will fight publicly to address inequality, but perhaps thinking back to that contentious 2014 hearing, she has a message for her Republican friends in Congress. The wage gap and income inequality should not be politicized. There are facts that everyone recognizes. So, with that, I need to end. I thank you for listening to today's OWL Radio. This program will be replayed at 9 p.m. this evening. You can also listen to OWL Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.com. This is Shama saying goodbye from OWL Radio.